Mr. Racine? Did I say that right? Did I get your name right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Well, we're ready to hear from you.
Your honors, may it please the court, Xavier Racine on behalf of petitioner Martin Mendoza-Leyva. Just as a very quick preliminary matter, I apologize in advance for any difficulty I have in hearing. I seem to have come down with a little bit of a cold, so I ask for your patience in case.
Well, I'm going deaf, and my wife says I'm trying to. So we'll have the same problem.
Thank you in advance, Your Honor. Your Honor, this case deals with very complex immigration concepts and issues, but at its heart it involves a relatively straightforward application of statutory construction and statutory analysis. This case deals with provision INA 212H, a provision of the Immigration Nationality Act that grants certain waivers to aliens subject to grounds of an indisability. Now, 212H very clearly, very deliberately, very unambiguously delineates aliens who do not qualify for the waiver and are barred from the waiver. 212H states that no aliens previously admitted as aliens lawfully admitted for permanent residence are not eligible for the waiver. Now, those two concepts, those two definitions, are defined in two different statutory subsections in the definition portion of the Immigration Nationality Act. Specifically, under INA 101A13, the definition of admitted or admission is described as the inspection and authorization of an alien, his entry into the United States. On the other hand, 101A20, admitted to lawful permanent resident status, refers to the privilege accorded to certain aliens to reside here permanently as immigrants. Now, the fact that Congress, in crafting this very specific section in 212H and referencing these two terms in the same sentence, is very unique and sets out a very specific class of aliens. It's so unique, in fact, that in no other part of the Immigration Nationality Act, in the entire Act, are both words used in the same sentence. I also want to draw attention to the fact that this uniqueness was recently recognized by the Board of Immigration Appeals in the case of Espinosa-Gulat, or BO, that's referenced in both our brief and that of Amicus. The Board, and this case is important for a number of reasons, but the Board of Immigration Appeals in that case substantially backtracked from matter of Kolchenevich and recognized the uniqueness of 212H.
Are you saying that the intent of Congress is clear?
Yes, Your Honor.
So the intent of Congress was to favor illegal aliens over legal, who legally came into the country. Is that what you're saying the intent of Congress
was? Well, that very specific issue is not necessarily the one before the court, because I guess the one before the court would be, did Congress intend to favor certain permanent residents as opposed to other permanent residents? But to address your question, this has been litigated before, and in fact, the board in matter of Michelle, which is also cited in our brief, clearly admitted that certain aliens who came in illegally without inspection are benefited, because under 212H, since they have no admission either as a non-immigrant visa or as a permanent resident, they are here purely illegally. There's no doubt that they're entitled to 212H relief.
But is it your position? That Congress intended that result. That is, that they intended permanent residents who illegally came into the country had the advantage over permanent residents who legally came into the country.
Yes, Your Honor. And in fact, that distinction has been upheld because permanent residents are not a suspect class, and because there are rational reasons, as delineated by this court in the Bracamontes decision, and also as stated by the Third Circuit in the Hanif decision that just came out very recently. They point to several reasons why Congress might have intended that. They point to the fact that people who come here illegally and obtain their permanent resident status pursuant to adjustment of status have anecdotally more ties, more U.S. citizen relatives. They went through arguably stricter scrutiny and background checks to obtain that status. And so there are a number of reasons listed both by a panel of this court in Bracamontes and by the other circuits, namely the Hanif decision and the Lanier decision, the 11th, that specifically recognize that while there might be some disagreement about, you know, whether these reasons are perfectly, absurd or not, they're definitely rational. They're definitely rational and they're definitely there. So yes, to answer your question, yes, we do believe that that was definitely Congress's intent, as recognized by the circuit courts that have addressed this issue.
Mr. Racine, I'm sure government counsel will address this in some detail, but I'd like to ask you, what's left for this panel to do in light of Bracamontes?
In other words,
if a panel were determined to get around Bracamontes, is it possible?
That's correct, Your Honor. I mean, in the sense, I believe Bracamontes already decided the issue before this court.
Okay, so in having said that, what didn't decide that leaves any room for us to decide anything differently?
I mean, the factual circumstances in Bracamontes were different.
So there you had a guy who had entered.
Correct, Your Honor. Correct.
Temporary. Okay. Correct. So is that the only difference between this case?
Essentially. And again, the key analysis becomes 212H talks about those who do not qualify. And so they're very clear two sets of aliens that can qualify and those who cannot qualify under 212H. Those who were admitted, who had an event or an action that granted them lawful permanent resident status, and those people are not eligible, and those who were not admitted. Now, Bracamontes said, well, these people were admitted, but they were admitted in another status. Therefore, they weren't admitted as lawful permanent residents. But obviously, once you read the statute that way, it follows that anyone who was not admitted as a lawful permanent resident does qualify. Now, that includes people who entered without inspection, like the petitioner and similarly situated individuals, and people who entered with non-immigrant visas, like the petitioner in Bracamontes. So while there is a factual difference, ultimately, the reasoning of this court, were they to follow petitioner's rationale, would fall in line with Bracamontes and the other circuit court decisions. I also wanted to address something very briefly. I only have a minute left, but there seems to be this notion that that people who are granted adjustment of status and are granted permanent resident status, that it's absurd for them to have been granted the status without having been admitted. In other words, how can you be admitted for permanent resident status if you've never been admitted in the first place? But Congress specifically recognized that. In fact, that's why we have sections like 245I of the Immigration Nationality Act, or 8 U.S.C. 1225I, as it's referenced in the statute. And this was specifically referenced in all the circuit courts that addressed this issue. And, you know, while they didn't ultimately necessarily approve, they said, and I'm quoting the circuit on this, we cannot substitute our judgment for that of Congress. We can, and in fact must, give the statute the meaning Congress intended. Further, the fact that Congress may not have foreseen all of the consequences of a statutory enactment is not sufficient reason for refusing to give effect to its plain meaning.
In a way, it's even more the Attorney General, isn't it, than Congress? I mean, the Attorney General has broad discretion.
That's true. Ultimately, the decision of the waiver rests with the Attorney General, correct?
And even in the adjustment status.
Yes, Your Honor. As delegated to USCIS.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Winograd.
Chief Judge Traxler, and may it please the court, Ben Winograd, representing the American Immigration Council as amicus curiae. In Bracamontes versus Holder, this court held that the aggravated felony bar in section 212H of the INA means what it literally says, namely that it only applies to aliens who have in fact been admitted in permanent resident status following inspection at a port of entry, and not to those who entered the United States and subsequently adjusted to permanent resident status post-entry. Now, both the petitioner here and the petitioner in Bracamontes entered the United States before adjusting to permanent resident status. However, unlike the petitioner in Bracamontes, the petitioner here did not have a pre-adjustment admission. So, as Judge Davis noted, the issue in this case is whether this factual discrepancy justifies a different legal outcome. Now, we contend that it does not. First, we think that the language of the statute is no less plain or unambiguous here than it was in Bracamontes. Second, after Bracamontes was decided, the BIA issued a decision on this very issue, holding that aliens like the petitioner are not subject to the aggravated felony bar in removal proceedings arising in the Fourth Circuit. Third, we think the policy motivations that this court ascribed to Congress in Bracamontes apply with even greater force to aliens like the petitioner. And finally, adopting the government's position in this case would create a split with the Third, Fifth, and Eleventh Circuits. Now, we believe the main reason why the petitioner should be allowed to apply for a 212H waiver is that the government's position simply cannot be reconciled with the plain text of the statute. In crafting this provision, Congress contemplated two discrete classes of aliens: those who have entered the United States in permanent resident status at a port of entry, and those who have not. Every alien necessarily falls into one of those two categories, so there simply was no gap that Congress left for the agency to fill. By definition, an alien who has not been admitted at a port of entry in any status has not been admitted at a port of entry in permanent resident status. So, as we've been saying, we believe the text is just as plain and unambiguous here as it was in Bracamontes. And to say that Congress was silent with respect to this question is to create an ambiguity where none, in fact, exists. Now, as we read the portion of Bracamontes on which the government is relying, which we believe to be dicta, it appears that the court was concerned that a literal reading of Section 212H would leave permanent residents like the petitioner with no date of admission at all. Now, we submit that while this concern may be relevant to other provisions of the INA, it is not material to the issue in this case. For example, in the Aremu decision, A-R-E-M-U, this court was considering a provision of the INA that makes aliens subject to removal for committing a crime involving moral turpitude within 5 years of the date of admission. Now, the petitioner in that case had been admitted to the country on a temporary visa before adjusting to permanent resident status. Under the plain language of the statute, this court held that the petitioner's date of admission was his initial entry to the country and not his subsequent adjustment of status. At the same time, it reserved the question of whether the date of his adjustment could be used as a proxy for the date of his admission if doing so would be necessary to avoid absurd results in cases involving permanent residents like the petitioner who would otherwise have no date of admission. When that precise issue arose in a subsequent case before the BIA, we actually submitted a brief in which we conceded that notwithstanding the plain language of the statute, it was permissible for the agency to use the date of adjustment as a proxy for a date of admission because failing to do so would lead to a generally absurd result, namely complete exemption from the ground of removability for aliens who commit crimes involving moral turpitude. But, Your Honors, we believe that Section 212H is completely different. Congress was concerned with the manner in which permanent resident status was accorded, not the date on which it was accorded. So to acknowledge that the petitioner was not, in fact, admitted in permanent resident status for purposes of 212H is not to say that his adjustment could not be used as a proxy for the date of admission in another case involving a separate provision of the Act, if doing so would be necessary to avoid an absurd result. It simply recognizes, as the Board itself put it in a 2007 case called Matter of Briones, quote, "The fact that a statute's plain language may lead to absurd results in some cases does not permit us to disregard that language in other contexts where no such absurd results would follow." Now, the second reason why we believe the petitioner should win this case relates to the Board's intervening decision in Matter of E.W. Rodriguez. The issue in that case was precisely the same issue before the court here, albeit in a case arising in the Fifth Circuit, not the Fourth Circuit. Like the petitioner here, the alien in E.W. Rodriguez entered the country without inspection and subsequently adjusted to permanent resident status. As it did in Matter of Koljenovic, the Board initially distinguished the Fifth Circuit's decision in the Martinez case because that case involved an alien who had previously been admitted on a temporary visa. However, Mr. E.W. Rodriguez filed a motion to reconsider, and then the Board issued its precedential decision, which retreated from the distinction it made in Matter of Koljenovic and recognized that the Fifth Circuit's decision in Martinez did not allow such a distinction. Now, what's critically important is that in reaching that conclusion, the board found no logical basis to distinguish between the Fifth Circuit's decision in Martinez on the one hand and the 11th Circuit's decision in Lanier and this court's decision in Bracamontes on the other. The board, as a result, the board held that matter of Kuljinovic no longer applies to removal proceedings arising in the Fourth Circuit, just as it no longer applies to removal proceedings arising in the Fifth and 11th Circuits. And in so doing, we believe that the board at least implicitly conceded that there is no valid basis to distinguish between aliens like the petitioner in this case and aliens like the petitioner in Bracamontes.
So if this case were before the board last week, unquestionably,
that is our position. Currently, in cases arising before the BIA or an immigration judge, a petitioner in this person's position would be eligible to apply for a 212H waiver. And we believe that would only change if this court reaches a contrary conclusion.
By the board's own declaration.
By the board's own declaration, correct. So, and we think that if the board believed that a valid basis existed to draw the distinction that the government is urging the court to make in this case, it could have and would have said so in E.W. Rodriguez. Now, we think it's also worth remembering that the petitioner in Bracamontes himself also originally entered the country without inspection. The only reason that he had an admission prior to adjusting status is that his family happened to make a brief trip to Mexico while he was still considered a temporary resident under the 1986 amnesty. But had the petitioner in Bracamontes never made that trip, he would be in precisely the same position as the petitioner here, namely a permanent resident who had never lawfully entered the country. So we do not see any reason why the petitioner in Bracamontes should be in a better position or the petitioner here in a worse position based on such a minor discrepancy.
Okay, thank you. You've got some time reserved.
Thank you.
Ms. Glazer.
Good morning. May it please the court, Sherry Glazer, appearing on behalf of the United States Attorney General. Your Honors, contrary to my opponent's contentions, Bracamontes is not controlling in this case. In this court in Bracamontes specifically distinguished circumstances of Mr. Bracamontes, an alien who lawfully entered the country before he adjusted status, with the circumstances of Mr. Mendoza, who has no lawful entry to the country whatsoever. This court specifically stated that the board arguably had to fill a gap regarding aliens who entered the United States without inspection and then adjusted status, because 212H was entirely silent concerning how to treat these aliens with no lawful entry.
What do you think Judge Nguyen meant when he used the term arguably?
I think Judge Nguyen meant that, you know, there's a gap in the statute, and the statute is ambiguous on how to treat these aliens. And in reaching that conclusion, this court acknowledged that Congress, in Section 212H, was focused on the definition in INA 101A13A, the term admission, and aliens who had achieved this lawful entry. And the critical distinction in this case is Mr. Mendoza does not have that admission that Congress was focused on. He never was crossed the border pursuant to inspection and authorization by an immigration officer. And thus, the government contends that since Congress was focused on this definition in 101A13A, and Mr. Mendoza does not have this critical event, that the statute is ambiguous on how to treat this alien, and this case should be analyzed under Chevron Step 2. Pursuant to Chevron Step 2, it is reasonable that Mr. Mendoza's adjustment is an admission. Now, Your Honors, under Section 245 regarding aliens who entered without inspection, the Attorney General is essentially performing the functional equivalent of an immigration officer who's inspecting an alien at the border. You know, Mr. Mendoza's adjustment was the first time that he was inspected by an immigration officer. This is the first time that he was looked at. And even though he was present in this country when he applied for adjustment, this inspection is what rendered him lawfully in this country. It's very significant that this was the first time he was granted status. And this is when, essentially, his clock in this country began to tick. And under Chevron Step 2, you know, my opponents brought up the board case, Matter of Guillot, and with all due respect to my opponents, they in some ways misconstrue the holding in that case. In that case, you know, the board disagrees with the Lanier decision that's in opposition to the decision in a matter of Kuljinovic, and the board in that case was limiting the Lanier decision just to Section 212H, but the board never said that the Lanier decision didn't create absurd results throughout the INA. It does create one very significant absurd result that we now have an incoherent statutory scheme pursuant to Lanier, pursuant to Hanif, and pursuant to Martinez.
Martinez was decided in 2008. So it's been 4 years that the Attorney General and the Secretary have been aware of this seeming incongruity. Have the agencies taken any steps with Congress to fix this?
No, not that I'm aware of, no. The agency still believes that, pursuant to matter of Kuljinovic, that Congress did not intend to make the distinction.
Does the agency believe that in the Fourth Circuit?
Well, the case was issued, matter of Rodriguez, that my opponent referred to, and in that case, the board essentially held that, you know, it acknowledged it disagreed with Lanier and the other cases that have been issued, and said that it will continue to apply matter of Kuljinovic in circuits where it was able to.
Not in the Fourth Circuit.
Well, in dicta, it did. It incompletely described the holding in Bracamontes as finding 212H to be unambiguous generally. And DHS filed a motion for reconsideration, and it was untimely. And the board denied the motion because it was untimely. The board held that exceptional circumstances didn't warrant sua sponte reopening Rodriguez to clarify the scope of Bracamontes because they were cases that arose in two different circuits. The board did say that when a case arose in the Fourth Circuit, that it would take the opportunity to determine whether clarification of Bracamontes was necessary. So it's not such a closed question as my opponent contends it is.
If I were in trouble, I'd want a lawyer just like you to represent.
Oh, thank you.
That was wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. And my opponent also brought up matter of Michel. Matter of Michel is distinguishable from this case. And the alien in matter of Michel, when he applied for the Section 212H waiver, had never applied for adjustment before that. So this alien is distinguishable from Mr. Mendoza in that when he was seeking a 212H waiver in conjunction with an application for adjustment of status, he had no lawful entry, or I'm sorry, no admission whatsoever, not even as an LPR. So regarding Mr. Michel, that alien, you know, 212H clearly does not apply to him because he had no admission whatsoever, not even as constituted through an adjustment. And, you know, the issue came up earlier regarding the language in Bracamontes, looking at the distinction that this court plainly held Congress made in Bracamontes between aliens who lawfully entered with LPR status and aliens who lawfully entered then adjusted, and looking at that distinction, whether it was reasonable. But this court in Bracamontes, the holding was really, it was based on the fact that Mr. Bracamontes had this previous lawful entry. The court did not look at anything regarding the issue in this case except the acknowledgement that the statute was silent. And so to the extent that my opponent argued that this court has already looked at the distinction involving an alien in Mr. Mendoza's circumstances, that's simply not true. The holding was clearly predicated on the fact that Mr. Bracamontes had the previous lawful entry. And that's also in related to what Amicus argued regarding Mr. Bracamontes initially entering the country without inspection. But the key point, the critical point that my opponent ignores is that Mr. Bracamontes, even if the first time he came into this country was unlawfully, he had this inspection at the border that Mr. Mendoza simply never had.
Ms. Glazer, I presume that if you were personally aware, notwithstanding the late filing of the motion for reconsideration, if you were personally aware of a case in which the board had actually applied Bracamontes, as it says it will, you'd bring that to our attention.
I would. I'm not aware of any case in which that has happened.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And
I'm sorry, I didn't mean.
No, it's okay. I'm trying to
train of thought.
Gain my thought. And, you know, again, Amicus brought up the board case matter of Briones, and in his brief, he cites a case in this court, Stone.
I'm sorry. I also presume if the board had refused to apply Bracamontes, you would also bring that to our
attention. Absolutely. We filed a 28J, I believe it was last Tuesday or Wednesday, informing the court of the denial of the motion to reopen and the language in that order.
Yes.
Amicus brought up the case Matter of Briones and a case he cited in this brief matter, in his brief, Stone versus Instrumental Lab Company. It's a case in this court. And he relies on those cases to argue that any absurdities that would result in other provisions of the INA have no applicability to this case if this court construes Mr. Mendoza's adjustment to not be an admission. And that's incorrect for two reasons. As I previously pointed out, a huge absurdity that would result is that Mr. Mendoza's adjustment, an alien who enters without inspection, that alien's adjustment is then going to be seen as an admission under some circumstances in the provision in the Act and not an admission in other provisions of the Act. And that creates for an incoherent and an unsymmetrical statutory scheme. And the Supreme Court has held that courts should interpret a statute to provide for a symmetrical and a coherent statutory scheme. And in addition, on a more basic level, those two cases do not support my opponent's contention. Those cases were looking at the application of a statute to two different factual scenarios, and it held that applying the plain language of a statute to scenario A would create absurd results, but that did not preclude the court from applying that same statute to fact pattern B, in which absurd results would not occur. But that's a natural consequence of a law, that applying a statute to two different scenarios is going to presumably end up in two different results. But we're not dealing with that in this case. We're dealing not with two different factual scenarios. We're dealing with one factual scenario, an alien who entered without inspection, who adjusts his status, and whether that adjustment is an admission or not. And so this case is distinguishable from that citation as well. And in my opponent's brief, another argument I'd like to address, he cites the TPS statute to try to argue that it would not be absurd if Mr. Mendoza did not achieve an admission upon his adjustment and he would just be in this country with lawful status. And the TPS statute really isn't relevant to this case. It's a different circumstance. It's a very special circumstance. And an alien, the statute makes clear, INA Section 244, that an alien who's granted this TPS status, that grant does not change the alien's admissibility or inadmissibility. And there's a court case, Matter of Sosa Ventura, where the alien entered without inspection and was put into proceedings as an alien present in the United States without being admitted or paroled. And while he was in proceedings, he was granted temporary protected status. And he moved to terminate his proceedings, and the board denied, saying that while this alien had such TPS status, he was protected from removal. But it didn't change the fact that he was still inadmissible and he was unlawfully, illegally in this country. And once he did not have TPS status, he would then be removable. He would then be able to be removed. And that's in contrast to the issue in this case where, you know, Congress has directed, as the government points out in its brief under Section 245, that an alien who entered without inspection, you know, achieves that the alien, that the Attorney General records this alien's lawful admission for permanent residence. And the Third Circuit, I believe the word they use was ministerial. They called this recording ministerial, but it's not ministerial in regards to Mr. Mendoza. It's very significant. This was the first time that he was inspected, as I mentioned before, by an immigration officer. And even though he was lawfully present in this country, this inspection is what rendered him legally in this country. And so it essentially is an equivalent for him to admission at the border. It's a procedural mechanism by which this alien is assimilated to the position of an alien seeking to enter the country. And it's very reasonable that then his adjustment constitutes an admission. And in the brief also, the government points out that its interpretation that Mr. Mendoza's adjustment is an admission creates a symmetrical statutory scheme, it parallels past board precedent, and it effectuates legislative intent. Congress, in the conference report, stated that it wanted congruity between the residency requirements and cancellation of removal under INA 240 capital A and under the residency requirement in this statute, INA Section 212H. And the government's interpretation, as pointed out in our brief, effectuates that legislative intent. Now, there are two points I would like to make on this. The Third Circuit rejected the government's argument, and the Third Circuit misconstrued, with all due respect to the Third Circuit, the government's argument. The Third Circuit looked at the language in the two residency requirements and held that because they are not exactly the same, that Congress did not want congruity. The government doesn't disagree that the requirements are not exactly the same. They are slightly different, but that doesn't change the fact when looking at the government's interpretation. It provides for a congruity where when an alien is applying for cancellation of removal and fails to meet the residency requirement, that same alien cannot meet the residency requirement in Section 212H. My opponent also, amicus in his brief, cites a matter of Rotimi to argue that the board has held that Congress did not want congruity, but again, with all due respect to my opponent, he misconstrues the language in matter of Rotimi. The board never said that Congress does not want congruity between the residency requirements. The language that my opponent points to is the board saying that the conference report's reference to 240 capital A relates to the alien's residence after being granted a status in this country, that essentially Congress wanted, the residence that Congress wanted for Section 240A is lawful residence, not mere physical presence. And the board was looking to whether the conference report was meant to incorporate the totality of 240 capital A, which would also include 240 capital A D1, which has a reference to mere physical presence, and the board held that it did not mean to incorporate the entirety, and it really just meant to, for the residency requirement to be lawful residence, not mere physical presence.
Any other questions? I think we understand your argument.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mr. Winograd, you have some time remaining.
Thank you, Your Honors. Counsel for the government made numerous references to the need to preserve a symmetrical statutory scheme, or to preserve, or not to create an incoherent statutory scheme. Now, we certainly, no one will deny that the INA is a very complex statute, but we would submit that the proper way for an agency to interpret a complex statutory scheme is to look at each provision on a case-by-case basis rather than announce a blanket rule that applies regardless of the surrounding statutory context and which ignores an explicit statutory definition. Now, it is one thing for the agency to take the statutory scheme into account when considering an otherwise ambiguous provision of the Act or an otherwise ambiguous language, but it's quite another for the agency to disregard an explicit statutory definition, simply in the name of preserving the overall structure of the Act. As I said before, we believe that this case should be resolved under step one of Chevron, but if I could for a moment address, if this court does find that there is an ambiguity, we believe that the petitioner should win even at step two of Chevron. The reason is, as this court has said before, agency interpretations are entitled to considerably less deference if they're not consistently held over time. Now, in matter of Koljenovic, the board began from the premise that it could not construe the literal language of Section 212H or not adhere to the statutory definition of the term admitted in Section 212H without inevitably creating absurd results in other provisions of the Act. However, in matter of Espinosa-Guillot, which now both sides have mentioned, the board completely abandoned this rationale. Now, the facts of that case are discussed on pages 14 and 15 of the petitioner's reply brief, but suffice it to say that the board recognized in that case that the language of Section 212H is unique and that the 11th Circuit's decision in Lanier, quote, should not be read to extend to other provisions of the Act. So the point, Your Honors, is that the board can't have it both ways. In matter of Koljenovic, it can't disregard the statutory definition of admitted because of the absurd results that it says would inevitably arise in other statutory provisions of the Act, but then go on to distinguish appellate court rulings that declined to follow matter of Koljenovic on grounds that the language of Section 212H is unique and that such decisions shouldn't be read to extend to other provisions of the Act. So that, we submit, is a quintessential example of arbitrary agency decision-making that should not be accorded deference, even if this court were to find that Section 212H is silent with regard to the petitioner. Now, with respect to the board's intervening decision in matter of E.W. Rodriguez, you know, we certainly do not submit that this court is bound by or must defer to an agency's interpretation of its own opinion. We certainly don't submit that.
But the point is that Matter of E.W. Rodriguez repudiated the very distinction in Matter of Koljenovic upon which Judge Wynn was relying when he said that there is, as Judge Davis noted, arguably a gap in the statute. So we think the foundation for the dicta in Bracamontes was in effect wiped out in Matter of E.W. Rodriguez. And my final point, the government has relied on a provision of the conference report when this provision was passed for the proposition that Congress desired a congruity between the residence provision of this statute and the analogous provision in Section 240A of the INA. And our point is simply that provision of the conference report in a prior decision called Matter of Rotimi, the board referred to that piece of legislative history as making a, quote, cryptic reference to Section 240A of the Act. So the point is simply that the board cannot rely on a piece of legislative history that it eschewed in a previous decision.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll come down and greet counsel and then go into our next